and there he starts. The Shulchan Aruch said it's tragic. The Rambam and the Rif Paschal said it's kosher. The Rosh says it's strength. The Tur says it's strength. You've got three against two. What can I do here? I can't overrule the majority. I've got to start searching. So I've already got the Rambam and the Rif. Well, they're two mighty strong ones. So if I've got the Rambam and the Rif, I've got a good chance of finding something. I've got a Ramban also. So I've got a Ramban and I've got a Rambam and I've got a Rif against the Shulchan Aruch and against the Rosh. I've already got and the two. So I've already got three against three. One more. Find a Rajbo. So I've already now got four against three. But they're not the latest ones. But I've got something I can work on. And then I start looking again.
And you only rule, you only use these kind of procedures
under the most
extreme,
extraordinary circumstances.
So I thought under the most extraordinary circumstances. Okay, but this is the case of starvation where her life is in danger.
Not too.
Then it all goes out.
There's nothing to eat in Shabbos. So what does she have? She'll have a little bit of milk there that she'll give them, a little bit of bread she'll give them, some potatoes that she's got over. That'll be her Shabbos. So that is what you do, and you sit and work. It can take you hours, but you sit and work on this. The story is told of Shmuel Salanti, the rabbi, he was the Rabbi Yerushalayim. This goes back over 100 years ago. Very, very clever person. And a woman came to him. She brings a bowl of soup. And the tears are streaming down her eyes. Some milk fell into the soup. Fried it. So cool. First of all, stop crying. Don't have to cry. Have a bit of faith also. What is the trouble? How much milk fell into the soup? He knows that if there is 60 times more soup than milk, he's all right. He works it out. There isn't 60 times more milk, soup than milk. There isn't. You think he stops there? You think he stops there? And she starts, the tears are coming again. Just a minute. Just a minute. This is my chance. Go and call Tevye, the milkman. Go and call. Tevye comes, he says, Tevye. How much water did you put into the bowl? Tevye, I can swear I never do this. Just a minute, Tevye. Don't tell me any nonsense here. Are you a fool, Tevye? You mean to say you're such a fool that you never put in any water into the milk? I can't believe it of you. You see, you said you put in a little. How little, he says, come, Tevye. Surely, yesterday you put in a little bit more. There was so much water, it was raining. You mean to say you didn't make use of the rain? See, yesterday, quite right, I did. Now, tell me exactly how much you put in. He tells me, eventually, he tells me, he says, then how much you put in? He said, your bench was designed, Tevye. Praise be you. Too wonderful. Go have a very good Shabbos. You can. He comes to the room and he says, quite all right, you can do it all. But you don't let the thing go. You don't let the thing go. You do everything you possibly can. You can't do anything more. You can't do anything more. So, but that is the way it goes, that the later one knows all the others. And if you say that he's got to be a very reliable person, otherwise you don't touch him. If you don't touch him, you don't touch him with a pole. Just keep away from him.
I ask you this in a very serious way.
Yes.
Very frequently, when I go out speaking, or even in private conversation, it happened at my table a week ago, this whole question will come up. And the point will be made that the procedure that you're talking about is precisely what the conservative movement has followed. That Abraham Joshua Heschel was a very great mind, and Rabbi Finkelstein was a great mind, and Rabbi Ginsburg was a great mind. and that these people simply were a little bit more flexible and were able to take everything into account and to bring halakha to a new plane. Now, my answers to that in the past have been vehement, but probably not as effective as what you can tell us right now.
Since the fall of Constantinople, there was a good introduction to it. And Levi Ginsburg was never of doubt. That's the first thing we'll say. Levi Ginsburg was never of doubt. Levi Ginsburg would have said, look here, gentlemen, this is not my people. I don't trust it. It's not my people. You can't take it. I don't trust it. And Levi Ginsburg would never have touched it either.
He was a conservative?
David Ginsburg was a very great London. He went to the Conservatives. He wasn't a Conservative, but he was a professor there, because the arrangement was you give one lecture a week and the rest of the time they leave him alone and he'll be able to sit in there. And they paid him for it because they needed his name. And he went there when Schechter was there. And Schechter needed him very bad, and Schechter knew who he was. So that's all he did there. But he was they called the Schechter School, the Finkelstein School. I never speak about the Ginsburg School. He didn't allow himself to get into this sort of thing. That's the first thing that I've just got it clear, that he would never have done that. He might have said there's things for himself that he might have done, but he would never have set himself up as any kind of authority. That is one thing. The second thing is, you know, get a person like the Ponovizhirov. I had a big shire once in Johannesburg. And the Ponovizhirov is sitting with me in the house. He was a rov and a great rov. What better could I have? He said, dealing with the Shaila. He was a rov. He'd been ousted all for a day. For a couple of years, I haven't touched it. He said, I haven't got a feel. I know, even without the feel, I know already what it is. So I said, right, I'll tell you how to do it. I said, you won't give a decision, but allow me to discuss it with you at the end. And that, yes, yeah, certainly. So we sit down and we discuss the whole thing. The important thing is that all these people work within a framework. In that framework, you can go up and down and crossways, you can do everything, but you can't get outside of that. Once you go outside of that framework, it's finished. You can't touch it. That is what they do. They get outside of the framework. One other thing. If any authority speaks derogatively about any other authority, it's finished. If he just says, I say no, he's finished. Can't do it. Thirdly, think or speak. He's paid. How can he be an authority? Who's the other one?
Heschel
was paid. He's a theologian. How can he be an authority? How can he give a decision? Can't give a decision. Can't give a decision. I'm not the right to give a decision. How do you come to give decisions? Oh, it's Chaim, he was a baker. Then he made the Chazon Ish. Never had any position. The Moshe Feinstein, to whom is he beholden? Dealing with people. What are you dealing with? Put themselves up in a position? The greatest, when it came something that touched their congregation, they would be very careful not to pass it. Give it out. They wouldn't pass it. There were some terrible things there. They permitted Shechita if you stunned first, you see. Stunned first. It was a question people didn't have any meat. So, some Rabbonim got together. They did not give a suck. Perhaps we should say to them. But they said, only, one was a person who was known as a Yerushalmi, who was a very outstanding scholar, a very, very serious person, very orthodox person, a very serious person. He said, and I got him and said, halakhically I can work out that under these pressing circumstances it can be permitted. Also working it out with all these, those say yes and those might say yes, and he's all working it out, these things, under these pressing circumstances. He said, but I will not touch it unless two other Rabbonim will support me on it. And everybody knew that the two other Rabbonim had to be greater than me. It wasn't touched. It wasn't touched. But this is a serious approach it with all the seriousness. You know what a person does, what these people do before they say that a thing is permitted, what they do. My uncle was a pastor. Not his wife. We had charges when we were a Besdin of four, and an internationally renowned Besdin. When we had difficult charges, we wrote out the whole thing and presented it to another Besdin, presented it to different authorities. Once we had a disagreement amongst us, we could easily have taken a vote and have decided against it. They have decided to have taken a vote. And I would have been the one that would know the rules, and I was the youngest on the bed team. You can see what colleagues I had, where they said, no, we're not prepared to do that. Not prepared to do it. So the way we worked, if we each chose one person, and we sent the shiloh to each, to the different people, not we ourselves, but sent through the bed team, to each of the four different people. And then they took their results and put it together. But they could have overruled me at that stage. They didn't do it. But that is the way it worked. And we took the result of these four people. But it's done with tremendous seriousness. I'll give you several reasons. And the final reason. A posse can only be one that keeps every law of the Shulchan Aruch before he postulates that you don't have to. But he himself keeps it. But if he already doesn't keep it, and now he says, I postulate that you can't do, he disqualifies himself.
How about the later authorities in the Shulchan Aruch? Why then does he have
to? You follow?
Yes, I do.
So there are very, very many reasons it just doesn't hold any water. Can't. Those are not the authority, yes.
The Shulchan Aruch in particular, even though there are codes that have come after the Shulchan Aruch.
Yes, so?
But why can't you, what if the a later code says that you can do it differently than the Shulchan Aruch?
Yes.
Then you wouldn't be keeping the Shulchan Aruch, because you're bound by the
code. But that is, again, no code is going to say, I disagree with the Shulchan Aruch. He won't say it that way, you see. He'll probably say, although the Shulchan Aruch says it's permitted, it's still prohibited.
The point is, you can't have a stake in the...
It's still prohibited. And Michael, because there's another thing. Are there any things that you are stricter than Shulchan Aruch?
Any question?
Yeah. These people who... Are there any things that they go... They say, no, the Shulchan Aruch is too light on this, we've got to make it stricter. That the Shulchan Aruch says that ladies upstairs and men downstairs, but we say that ladies upstairs is not sufficient, there's going to be a barrier. Do they go as far as that?
On some things,
on what things? I'd like to see on what things.
The conservative, I don't mean to distract
yes,
the
yes,
here,
yes.
The conservative movement is very machmir on, in other words, they feel at this point that a man transgressing outside of marriage is equally serious to a woman transgressing outside of marriage, which, as I understand...
You're saying it the wrong way. They're saying that it's lighter. The conservative is saying that a woman has only since the extent that a man has.
No, they feel that on sexual matters, they are more rigorous than what I understand the din to be in the Shulchan Aruch. In other words, they feel that the din, rather than transgress, have any sort of extramarital union, that's a mitzvah for one, which one should give up one's life.
Yeah. Just take that. That begins the Torah. The Torah says a man can have more than one life. Doesn't advise it.
But you can have more than one wife. So the mate goes against the total. What they can do is this they are entitled to do. They can say that they inherit it. They said one man can take one wife. That's wrong. That's right. But who says that you can pursue that? For example, if a woman says she wants a divorce because her husband has been left with another wife, and this was under the understanding that it wouldn't be so, she'll get a heir. He'll go through a very hard time. And if you have an association with an unmarried, with a married woman, the children are among babies. Of course you'd have a very hard time. That's not making it. But those are the... But I must tell you that it is one of the conservative people some time ago, I don't remember who it was, but this was about 40 years ago, who said that he was very upset about how they were making the ownership for all. And he said, only a man who, even if he says that you can do these things, he himself keeps everything which you've got, only he's got the right to say. Now, I go even much further than that. But that's all part of the story. All right, now, I'm afraid you've got to give me your attention again. You're having too much of a good time tonight. Right. Now, gentlemen, we're going now to a Braise in Nido. We are still seeking... Larry, are you with me? We are still on the question... I'm sorry, Larry. We are still on the question, can the first beer take place on Shabbos? Mosiv Rav Chisto, ask Rav Chisto. Rav Chisto said, we are speaking about two types of young girls. Now, a girl, her life is like this. First of all, she is a katano, that is, until the age of 12. Then she becomes a naro, that is from 12 to 12 and a half. After 12 and a half, she becomes a begeris. The most important period in a girl's life, according to the Torah, is from 12 to 12 and a half. That's the most important period. Those 6 months. And those 6 months, the mother has got to know exactly how to treat this girl, how to carry on with this girl. Father also, but you're lesser extent. Those are the most important, that is the most important period in her life. You will notice that in the Torah, any Torah, whether it is on the West Coast, or whether it is in New York, or in London, or in Paris, or in New Zealand, whenever the word Na'aro is written in the Torah, it is written without a hay. You've noticed that.
Did you bring it to mind?
Have you ever done any Pius Torah?
Yeah.
Have you noticed it?
Yeah.
It's always written without a hay. Na'aro refers to a girl between 12 and 12 and a half. And it's written at that age, from 12 and 12 and a half. It doesn't matter whether it's as far as she's concerned, it doesn't matter whether she's dealing with a boy or with a girl, it doesn't matter. But that's the last time that it doesn't matter anymore. And that's the period of change, and that's the most important period. You want to say something?
I have a question, sir.
Let me finish if you don't mind.
Of course.
Yes. Now, but there's something that follows from that. Not only is it the most important period in a girl's life, it's most important for the man that this is the most important period in a girl's life. Because our whole attitude towards the other sex and the attitude of the other sex towards us is dependent on these 6 months, the way the girl is treated these 6 months. So it means that the whole nation is dependent on that. After all, half of the nation, or half of the world, is the other sex. You're dealing with half of the world, half the people you're dealing with is the other sex. So how important it is. We are beginning to see how important it is today.
Are you beginning to see? Well, marriage doesn't mean anything anymore. Not only marriage doesn't mean anything, incest doesn't mean anything anymore. Not only doesn't incest mean anything anymore, Professor Elizabeth Badinter says that motherhood doesn't mean anything. She said the whole thing is only contrived. It's conventional, that's all. There's nothing natural in it. Doesn't mean anything anymore. Don't you believe in it? Mothers shouldn't be attached to their children. Professor Elizabeth, with an F, some say for sugar, some say for saccharine, others say
we don't
for
want to go.
That's what she said. In case you want to know anything more about her,
where does she teach?
Paris. My father? I don't know where he teaches her. But I wouldn't like any young man to have any designs upon her because she's not Jewish. And secondly, she's married.
And third, Jewish with the
and thirdly, she's got three children. this is what it's coming. This is your rabbi said some time ago, and I can't tell you how impressed I was with this. He told me that a couple of years ago, he said that everything is going to go. He said everything is going to be ascribed to a taboo, and everything is going to go. And he told me then, he said, the next thing is going to be incest. So you're going to see. And the funny thing is that there was a man, John Ford, who wrote a play in, you know, this must be around about 1600.
Right.
My Sisters of War. Around about 1600. My Sisters of War, I think, because it's an awful name. It's a good play, but it's an awful name. We should use another name. And there he puts forward that theory there, that a brother and sister should be allowed to live together and marry for the rest of that. But anyway, that's what your rabbi said. And he said this, it must be nearly 2 years ago. He said, this is the next thing that is going to come. Won't be any law of business. Okay. You know, ich wollte die Zeit pushen. But I've got to tell you these things. But don't speak about it until tomorrow night. Don't give an answer about it tomorrow night. The Gemara says, Il mole lo mitnoten. Had the Torah not been given to us, we would have learned leaders, we would have learned conduct from the animals. For example, we would have learned that one doesn't steal from the animals. Now, I've actually taken the trouble to watch ants. And it's quite uncanny how they carry what to them must be huge logs, little twigs you see they carry. And how one puts it down, sometimes he rests, sometimes he puts it down and he goes away. Where he goes, I don't know, but he goes away. And another one comes, and he's got to go right back to get it, and he smells this, but he knows it's not his, and he leaves it, and he goes and gets another one. And then eventually this one comes back and fetches and takes it, and he goes on. But he knows. He knows, you see, it's not his. So we learn gazelo, that one doesn't steal, we learn it from the ant. Here's the Gemara. We will learn fidelity from the pigeon. I've seen that myself. When we lived in Cape Town, our shoe was in the gardens. This was the government gardens. And to our home, we went through the gardens. I was saying this several times during the day, I went through the garden. We always walked through the gardens, a lovely walk, and it was full of pigeons. And I used to notice the pigeons and the pears. And a pigeon, if it had a stripe round its neck, a collar round its neck, then its mate also had a collar round its neck. And I always used to wonder, how did he know that he had a collar around his neck, that he had to get a wife who had a collar around her neck? Now, he couldn't see himself. I always used to wonder, that's how it was. That's how it was. There was a pair of pigeons that I saw. There were a pair of pigeons that I saw. And I was watching these two pigeons always. One day, only one. I realized something must have made the other pigeon. And I watched the pigeon remain there. I watched this pigeon till it died. Every twice a day, I was watching this guy's appeal. I was watching it till it died. Fidelity, says the commander. Well, goes through several avenues. I could never understand this Gemara. What does it mean? If there were no Torah, we would learn this, but there is a Torah, so what is it telling me? What is it telling me? You've heard me speaking about the deterioration. Set in. And I want to tell you that I speak about the deterioration. It's smart to that Torah. This is what the Torah says. We are going further and further from the source, and as we go further and further from the source, there's less and less of it. Max Nordau wrote a book on degeneration. Well, he was speaking about this. People like Goethe wrote about it already. Even Venice has got this theme of degeneracy. But is it possible? We've got to say that. How can the Gemara say a thing like that? I never thought it was possible that we would get a society that wouldn't have any standards. It doesn't go to the Torah because they've got no standards. So the Torah says, should it happen that you say there is nothing absolute, there are no standards. There isn't any standards. Nevertheless, it's still there. I gave a shiur this morning in San Jose. And I started on Errol today, preparing for Errol. You go to the shofar every morning. The Rambam says, why do you blow the shofar? Uru, uru yeshenim, awake, awake your sleepers. And they quote this verse in our notes. And just a few words, but Amos says it so much better than I could ever say it, that I wouldn't in he talk a shofar bo'ir va'am lo yecharodu. Is it possible that the shofar would blow in the city and the people won't tremble? And I asked him, I said, sir, do you tremble when you hear the shofar blow? But the truth, you really tremble. Lost the feeling. So what do you do if you lose the feeling? Just go to the animals.
They tremble.
You take a dog, lock him into a room, and bring about a tail with a chauffeur, and let him blow the chauffeur and see what happens to the dog.
Michael, are you willing?
and see what happens to the dog. Do you see what happens to him? He trembles.
Michael,
I don't understand this. I thought that the Torah lists up the above animals, and yet they only teach us what the animals would teach us, and we are no higher than that.
But when man sinks lower than the animal, when a man sinks to the level of an animal, the Torah says that he's no such thing. The Torah says that if a stone ceases to be a stone, just crumbles. If a vegetable ceases to be a vegetable, it doesn't become a mineral. It decomposes. If an animal ceases to become an animal, it doesn't become a vegetable. thing. If a human being ceases to become a human being, he loses his mind. Does he become an animal? He's much worse than an animal. If he loses that which distinguishes him, he's much worse than an animal. You don't fall to the next one. If a Jew ceases to be a Jew, do you think he becomes a goy? You know what a goy is. A Gentile. Do you think he becomes much worse than a goy? He doesn't become a goy. He becomes much worse than a goy. My uncle used to give the example, this is what I'm kidding, he was a Kuzi. The Kuzi speaks about this. My uncle used to give the example, he said, you know, once upon a time, when you went on the journey, you went by foot. What's the worst that could happen? You stumbled over a stone. Freaked yourself out. Then you went on a donkey. Fell off the donkey. Terrible thing. Then you went with a cart and horse. Cart overturned. The sled, terrible thing. Get up on it. Then starts trains started getting quicker, motor cars, quicker motor cars, aeroplanes. The more sophisticated the means of transport, if anything goes wrong, the more serious it is. The more sophisticated the being, if anything goes wrong, the more serious it is. Mm-hmm. When people behave as they behave today, when I speak about people, I don't speak about all people, of course. I'm speaking about every person, but there's every person. You say such animals as worse than animals. Here Professor Baden has said that. Go to an animal and see how an animal treats its cubs. And how a lioness treats its cubs. Here you haven't got lionesses, but you've got bears. Watch the bear with its cubs. And see how a bear treats its cubs. That is natural. That is absolute. That is a standard. It means it's not conventional. It means it's in the breed, or it's in the creation. As laws of thermodynamics are in the creation. It's in the creation. So there is the motherly love for a child is in creation. You can root it out, perhaps you can root it out. That I know you can root it out, but what I haven't made up my mind yet is whether a person can really root it out, or whether that is the punishment that Hashem gives. That if a person falls to a certain death, then Hashem takes these things away from the human being. You haven't got them. These are gifts that are given to you. Take them away. Because if one of the two I don't have, it can be either one of them. Person falls. That is how those gifts falls. But we have got it in the Torah, for the Torah says. If there are no standards, then just go into the universe and see whether in the universe there are standards. In the animal world, you've got it. There you see it. So it means that it's something absolute, it's something that exists. It's the only way you can explain it. But I could never believe that it would come to such a time that I would have to say to my own people, you want to understand what this posuk means. Is it possible that the shofar blows in the city and the people don't tremble? We don't tremble. Let's take the dog and see how he reacts to it. Now, one thing we've got to get very, very clear. Another thing that the world has done here is it reacts is not what we want. We want a response. There's a very big difference between a response and a reaction. A reaction, there's no discipline involved in the reaction. In a response, there's a discipline in a response. And from a response, we expect that there should be a stirring. And that is what we call his par alus, or his par, David Archer would say, his par alut. It's a stirring. There's a stirring. It's a response, and from the response there is a stirring. From the stirring, there things can happen already. From the stirring, we translate it into life. Then we do it something, we do something about it. But those are the things that are necessary. So, we've got this very important period of a girl's life. 12 to 12 and a half. That is what the Torah demands. That the utmost care those 6 months of a girl's life. Not only because of the girl, because of the boys with whom she's going to come into contact too. So that's what you want to ask.
Are we actually defining it as between, as being between 12 and 12 and a half, or is it from 12 until the time that she begins?
No, 12 to 12 and a half. And during those 6 months, a lot of things happen. That's from 12 to 12 and a half. That is the girl about which the Baraita is speaking. Now, the Baraita says, Tinokesh lo higia zmano lira. We are, first of all, we are speaking about a girl who is less than 12. She's 11. So her time to see the menstrual flow has not begun yet. And better say, this is a girl of 12 and she gets married. So, Beishamai Omrim I'm sorry, the line about that. Tinokesh lo higia zmano, Motiv Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda asks the following question. Tinokesh lo higia zmano lira. A young girl whose time has not come for her to see. She's 11 years of age. The niece is. And she got married. So, are you with me? Beishamai Omrim Nosnim Lo'abo Leilos. Beishamai says, we give her 4 nights. Now, I don't know what that means. And when I don't know what that means, what can I do to help myself? I look at the Rashi, let me see what does Rashi say. Nosnim Lo'abo Leilos, Shekol Domim Shetire Bohem Matmas Tashmish. Says Rashi, any blood that she sees during those 4 nights, let her say that her husband has an association with her the first night, there's blood, but the time hasn't come for her to have the menstrual flow, she's only 11. We say that's dumb basuri. The second night he sees her again, dumb basuri. Third night again, dumb basuri. Fourth night again, dumb basuri. If after that there's dumb, then we say, well, she's an exception, we've already got to take it that this is dumb leaders, and he's got to separate from her. And he separates for the necessary time, and after that she goes to the mikveh. If then she doesn't see dumb anymore, fine. But anyway, we haven't done anything wrong. That is the way we work. And here Beis Hillel says, until the wound heals. Again, I don't understand. What does it mean, until? How can the husband know when the wound is healed? How can he know? Says Rashi, Ad shetechayu amaka, kol zman she'einu meshameshes below dam, lo choyitza amako. Says Beis Hillel, as long as there doesn't come a time that he has intercourse with her and there's no dam and there's no blood, as long as there is that time, any blood that she sees is dam basuri. You follow?
Can you repeat that once more?
Are you following?
Can you repeat that? What Beis Hillel says?
Then we are speaking about a girl of 11 years of age. Says Beis Shammai, and she gets married. The first night, if he sees Dambasuri Beis Shammai, it's Dambasuri. Second night, Dambasuri. Third night, Dambasuri. Fourth night, Dambasuri. But if the fifth night there is again Dumb, we say, no, that we've already got to deal as if it's Dumb leaders. Got it? Beis Hillel says no. I take it, Beis Hillel makes it still easier. He says, as long as there is blood, we say it's from the suit. But let us say, one night he has an association with it and there's no blood. From now on, if there's any blood, then it's dumbness. Right. Got it clear?
But also, isn't it true that if they stop having an association, they take a break in that, and then she bleeds spontaneously, it would be done either.
If they stop having an association, not so clear when Beis Shammai says mostly Lo'abo Leilos, we don't know whether they are a Sufim or not, whether it's got to be four.
Right, I see.
It may be in a year's time. In fact, we've got a proof from a Gemara Nida that in a year if it's even in a year, over straight over a year, it can be. That we will understand from the Gemara a little bit as it comes up. You follow?
Yes, I do. That's fine.
Who?
How does Beis Shammai arrive at 4 days as some arbitrary time during which time the blood is finished?
I'll explain that. You are hoping you wouldn't ask me that question.
All right, fine.
I've got to explain it to you. I was hoping you wouldn't ask it because it comes out in the Gemara. I can only give you the answer because I've been a little bit naughty and I've looked ahead what happened in the Gemara here after this. So, all what is this, you see, a person can have an association, but he doesn't make a complete rupture.
Yes, I understand.
And it's quite usual for 40 times before he makes a complete rupture. That's quite a usual thing. All right. Have you got that? Philip, have you got it?
Yes.
Now, that's one type of girl. Now we're going to deal with a second type of girl. Barry, are you all right? Mm-hmm. Are you happy?
Quite.
Right. Quite. Very happy. Now, Higia Zemanoliros. Now you are dealing with a girl of Higia Zemanoliros. This I also don't understand. What does it mean? The time has come for her to see the Nisais and she gets married. Just what does it mean? Higia Zemanoliros. The time has come for her to see. Has she seen or hasn't she seen?
She has not.
Let's see. How do you know?
I think the
rubbish is.
Isn't it? That's right here, sir. It's below right on top.
Oh, very good. Yes. Very good indeed. He gives. The time has come for her to see, but she has not seen. She's 12 years old. She's 12 years old and a month. She's 12 years old and 2 months.
Yes.
The time has come for her to see. The niece is, and but she hasn't seen. The niece is, and she gets married. Beishamai only knows the Lord of Horishon. Beishamai says the first night. That the first night, if he has 2 beers with her the first night, or 3 beers with her the first night, any dam in the first night is dam basuri. After that, any dam, we say dam needles. Because the time has already come, we are expecting it any day. Ubeishilei only, admin soy chavas arbo leilas. Beishilei says we give her 2 motsoy chavas, 2 Saturday nights. When would she get married normally?
Wednesday night.
So Wednesday night is the first night, Thursday night is the second night, Friday night the third night, and Saturday night the fourth night. So here we see there are 4 nights altogether. We give her these 4 nights. And these 4 nights, we say it's quite usual that after the... And Basile says, although the time has come for her to see, but these, it's so usual that he doesn't make, there's not a complete rupture the first night and the second night and the third night until the fourth night that we say it's done the suri for the first 4 nights. Have you got it, Phil?
I have a question. Isn't it possible to have a marriage on the very night that she has some news?
No. Well, you can have a marriage, but then they separate. He sleeps amongst the men and she sleeps amongst the women.
But how would you know?
She would know. She knows, you see. She knows, and she would never do anything like that. Now, says the Gemara, my love, surely, the e-lo-boyer is speaking moti-boyer. It means that I'm learning this. I hope you won't mind, Charles, I've consulted the Rashi on this before you've had a chance to do so yourself. So, the way Rashi learns it is, if...
No problem, sir.
Surely it means that, this is the way Rashi learns it, that if the first night he made a biyur and it wasn't complete, and the second night he made a biyur and it wasn't complete, and the third night he made a beer and it wasn't completed. Which is the third night?
Shabbos. Friday night.
And Friday night, and it's still bleeding. So if it's still bleeding, it means he made a wound. So it means he can make a beer on Shabbos. So Yav is a proof, like Rav, that you are allowed to have a beer on Shabbos. That is the proof that the Gemara wants to be.
If it's still bleeding through till,
he has an association with her again on Thursday night, and it's still bleeding. he has an association on Friday and it's still bleeding, says the Baraita, and this is not dumb, neither if it is dumb basuli. But how can he, it means that if it's bleeding, it's still a wound.
Yes. Meaning it's that still, he's still innocent.
It wasn't complete.
He's renewed the wound again.
Right. So it seems, and he's making the rupture into the third.
Right, right.
So it means that he can do it. That type of wound he's allowed to do on Shabbos. So yeah, you've got the proof. That is the proof that Rabbi Kista would believe.
Maybe it's only one foot it was started before.
Pardon?
Only one foot.
It shouldn't make any difference. Once he makes a wound,
it wasn't an initial.
Doesn't matter. Once it's a wound, it doesn't matter if it's not an initial wound. If he makes it, it's the same wound, and he makes it further, it's a wound. You follow? That doesn't make any difference. That doesn't make any difference. Still a chabura.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, David?
Can I try and get clear on something that you, Michael asked the question during the week, and that was why they would use the language of speaking of the fourth night as mostly Shabbos when you've got the issue all this time of whether or not the first Tia can be on Friday night. I did not quite follow your answer. Because all of a sudden now, the Tia has been on Wednesday night, which we haven't been talking about the whole time.
Yeah, but we know that that is the night that the beer should be. There's no question about that.
So it should be Wednesday. The only question is whether it's Wednesday.
Yes, the thing is, as we have in this writing, on Dapay Omid Abayt, we have in the writing, we have in the Tosfos. The only thing is, should it happen that he didn't have a beer?
Yeah, fine.
Either she was ill, he wasn't ill, or as David says, on Wednesday, they have a wedding on Wednesday, and before Wednesday, she becomes a deal, she becomes a needle. So it means they've got to wait, so that probably it's possible that she won't be able to have a beer until Friday night a week.
Yeah.
So that comes there. Then that would be the first beer. You follow? So that can easily work out. Yes, so. I'm sorry, Mark, I'll be ready for you in a moment. So?
Yeah, according to... the Bengal just said now that they saw it says it four nights.
Yes.
Are we talking about that he knows that each of these four nights he hasn't completed the beer? Or is he not aware of that?
He's not aware of it.
He's
but,
not
aware. But after the third night, you see there's blood, so he knows there's blood. And if there's blood the first night and the second night, then he knows there can be blood the third night, but because of Sophic we don't make it also. If it was a chabura, we'd say, even if it's a sophic, you can't do it. So it says that he can do it. Rashi touches that point.
But on the fifth night, he can't know until he's done it whether he's going to bleed. In which case,
yes.
He's committed the crime.
If it's the fifth night he does it, yeah, and she bleeds, we say, now that's it.
So, but he's doing, he's not violating.
No,
him. Okay,
yes.
Fine.
All right. Right, gentlemen, that is as far as I'm taking it to move. I mean, now, I just want to, we've got another 1.5 minutes. I just want to tell you this. Sometimes I feel very bad about the diversions and we speak about other things. Are you off though? Good, all right. Thanks very much, David. David is interested in wheelbarrows full of books. Books, even if they're full. I'm interested in personalities. I'm interested in Torah personalities. And I'm interested in young Jewish men and women becoming Torah personalities. By that I mean putting it at its very lowest, that they've got a Torah attitude towards life. That they respond, not react. Everybody reacts. Animals also react. I'm not interested in people reacting. I'm interested in people responding. We're learning responding. That the responding causes some stirring in the soul. And the stirring in the soul, that can lead on to anything after that. Anything can lead on to that. And that is why we learn tomorrow. That's the learning we learn tomorrow. And I believe that tomorrow is the only thing that can give it to you. If you can take it, not everybody can take tomorrow. Not everybody can take them on. If one has got the perseverance and one has got the endurance, one breaks through. Not everybody's got the perseverance and the endurance, but if you've got that and you break through, then you've got it. And that's the only thing that can give you a Torah personality. But I've got to bring in something of what is Torah life. And that is why I tell you these things about a Naro. And that is why I tell you about the Gemara in Eiruvin. Il mole lel mitno Torah, hadn't the Torah been given, we would have learned what the Torah tells, we would have learned it from the animals. I'll tell you, it took me to understand this, it took me 30 years. I've been puzzled for 30 years. It took me 30 years before I understood it. And I understood it only in the light of what is happening today. Where people have come, authorities. Today it's easy to be an authority. You're 4 years at university and they let you loose into the world. You're an authority already. It's easy to become an authority today. Before Yeshua became, before Moshe became an authority, he was 81. He was an authority. That in the world, the Torah says these things are there. Can't say that they're just conventional. You can't say that they're just contrived. They are in the universe. They are in the Bri'or. They are in creation. They are in nature. They are there. But it's possible that we can lose it. This I've never made up my mind about. Is it lose it? Is it possible for man to extinguish the divine spark that is in him? That it's possible to lose it, that I'm convinced of. But is it possible that he himself can extinguish it? Or no, Hashem takes it away from him. So make such a mess of him, say Hashem says, till here, I can't, further I can't. Yes, the way he hasn't got it. Yes, but anyway, he can lose it today. Right? Thank you very much. I just want to tell you that it's a great difference from when we first started. I'm beginning to enjoy it now.
Thank you very much.
So, it's thanks to you.
Will there be any time tomorrow for any of
you? Is this for you before we're going to close it? Both, actually.
Somebody got the Rambam, the sheets of the Rambam. How many did you make, Mark?
10.
So we're a little bit short, aren't we? So it means that some will have to share. What's about you? So are you sharing with me?
I can't hear.
You, all right. Okay. All right. Now, you remember two very important things took place at the last shiur, as far as I personally was concerned. And I can't tell you what these two things did for me. It's something very, very personal, but it has an indirect, at least, implication as far as you are concerned. And that is that, in as far as the Rambam was, Sol, not Sroel, alerted me to a point, and this is a very important point in the Rambam, and I just want to make it quite clear before we start the shiur. The second matter was a matter that came up in the Gemara, and I'll tell you about that afterwards. There is nothing that does so much for me as when a contribution is made round the table and one from which I personally benefit. If you can get me on a question that I can't answer, that is the greatest pleasure you can possibly give me. Now, if I can answer, it's half a pleasure. It's also very good. Now, first of all, I want to just read to you this Baraisa. There's a Baraisa and a Mishnah which I want you to bear in mind when we are doing the Rambam. The Baraisa reads as follows: Tonu Rabbono, the Rabbonon learned, Ketzad Seder Mishnah. How was the order of the teaching of the Torah Shebal Peh? That is what these words mean, Ketzad Seder Mishnah. How was the order of the teaching of the Mishnah introduced? How did they learn the Torah Shebal Peh? And it says, Moshe Lomad Mipi HaGdulah. Moshe learned it from the Rabbeinu Shleilam himself.
the Rebbein Yishraelim taught him the Torah Shebal Peh. How did the Rebbein Yishraelim teach Moshe the Torah Shebal Peh? If I use any words, please stop me and ask me what the word means. Because sometimes, just to test you out, I use a Chinese word. And I know you don't know the language, and then if you don't ask me what it is, I know that you're not listening to what I'm saying. Moshe Lomar Mikriyat Guru. Moshe learned the Torah from the Rebbein Yishraelim himself. Then, Nichnas, and this is Torah Shebal Peh, and when we speak about Torah Min HaShemayim, that the Torah is given directly to us, Min HaShemayim, then it's not something that is thought out by man, but this is given directly Min HaShemayim.
What is Min HaShemayim?
Min from heaven. Yeah, that means really it's a metaphor almost. Thank you. It's a metaphor almost for Hashem. Min Hashemayim, from Hashem, from heaven. You see, sometimes Hashem is referred to as Rachamim, as mercy. Sometimes he's referred to as Shemayim, as heaven. These are metaphors for Hashem. We can't really have a name for Hashem. We can only, from his manifestations that we know him. But Geburo, the strength, the Geburo, the strength, another metaphor for Hashem. So Moshe Lomar Mipia Geburo. Moshe learned it from Hashem. Nichnas Aaron, there entered Aaron, now when he had finished, Vesholo Le Moshe Pirko. And Moshe taught him the whole of the Torah Shebal Peh. Mistalik Aaron, the Yoshav Nishmil Zismel Moshe. Then Aaron withdrew and he sat on the left hand side of Moshe. Nichnasu Bono, Veshonu Lehem Moshe Pirkon. Then the two sons of Aaron came and Moshe taught them their lesson. Niskalku Bono, then the two sons withdraw. El Ozor Yoshav Yamin Moshe. El Ozor now sits on the right hand of Moshe. And Itomor on the left hand of Aaron. The Itomor. Nismol Aharon. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Le'olam Aaron Yamin Moshe. Rabbi Yehuda said that Aaron sat on the right hand of Moshe. Alright, it's a difference of opinion. We don't have to go into that. Chelzeir Nichnazu Zekenim. Now the elders, they weren't necessarily elders, they were the Sanhedrin. Some of them were comparatively young people. They entered Veshonol and Moshe Pirkon, and Moshe taught them the whole of the Torah of Shebal Peh. Nistalku Zekenim, and now the Zekenim, the Sanhedrin, the 70, sat down now in front. So you've got Moshe, Aharon, Elozor, Isomor. And the 70 Zekenim in front, Nichnasu Kolo Om. Now all the people came, the whole of the Am Yisrael came, and Moshe taught them the Torah Shebal Peh. So, how many times did Aaron hear the Torah being taught?
Four
times. Now, Nimsu Biyad Aaron Arbo'o, so Aaron had heard it four times, Biyad Bon of Shlosho, his sons three times, Ubiyad of the Kadim Shnaim, the Sanhedrin heard it twice, Ubiyad Kolo Omen, all the people had heard it once. Nistalek Moshe, and now Moshe withdraws. Veshonu lehem Aaron. Aaron comes forward and he teaches the people the Torah. So if you really want to understand the piece of Gemara, before you've gone through it four times, you haven't got a clue. That is the proof. You haven't got a clue before you've gone through it four times. And that is the way I was taught to learn Gemara. First you go through it four times with the Rashi. No Tosfos. Just the Gemara and Rashi four times. And when you've gone through it four times, you said, now let me try and understand what it's all about. And then you go deeper into it. So, Nistalek Moshe Mishonoen Aaron Pirko. So, Aaron now taught it really. Nistalek Aaron, now Aaron withdraws, and his sons, Elozer and Isomar, have heard it now four times themselves. Shonoen Bonof Pirko. Now their sons teach it to those who remain. Mistalku Bonov. Now the two sons, Elozer and Itomar, withdraw. Shonu Lehem Zekenim Pirkon. So now the Zekenim, the Sanhedrin, teaches the whole people the Torah Shebal Peh. Nimso Beyada Kol Harbo. So each one, each Israel has heard the Torah four times. What happened then? And just an interesting Omrav Leozer Chayv Odom Rishnas Letal Mido Arvo Pomi. So he says from here, Rabbi Leozer says, there's an obligation for a teacher to teach it to his students, to teach it, the Torah to his disciples four times. And makes a Kal V'Chomer. Take a person like Aaron. Look who his teachers were. Moshe, who had heard it, had it direct from Hashem. Just look who his teachers were. He heard it four times. How much more so must we make it? That is the conclusion we've drawn. But I've got to speak to you today, not about the conclusion. I've got to speak to you today about the point of, so this is the Seder Mishnah, this is the way the Torah Shebaal Peh was taught to the Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael, you know what Am Yisrael means? Was taught to the Am Yisrael. Then we finish with that. That's one subject. Now, this is the source. This is a Braisa. So with a Braisa, when we are doing a Braisa, we are right to the source of it. Right in the beginning of it.
Now,
yes.
What's the relationship of the Braisa to Mishnah? A Mishnah is more fundamental,
yes,
than a Braisa.
They have very close relationship. They're even closer than their cousins. They're actually brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Very close relationship. First of all, it's the same period. Secondly, it's the same authorities. Exactly the same people. The only thing is that Rabbi Yehuda Nosi, when he collected the Torah Shebaal Peh, and he was afraid that the time was coming when people would forget the Torah Shebaal Peh, and he wanted to preserve it for eternity, and he knew that he was limited in how much he could take and put down. He was limited. So what he took was the Mishnah. What he wanted very much to take, but decided that he couldn't take, became the Baraisa. But the word Baraisa means that which is taught outside. It means outside of the Mishnah.
Mm-hmm.
But the Mishnah and the brother and the Baraisa are brothers. The Mishnah is the older brother. But the Mishnah and Baraisa are very close together. Did you want to ask anything, Michael? Now, then, yes, Charles.
Just to refresh me, what place does Midrash come in? And what era, and also how is it weighted in comparison with Mishnah or Braita?
You're asking me two questions, and the second question is even a more important question than the first question, Charles. The answer to that is that the Midrash spreads over a very long period. You see, the Mishnah and the Braitas came to a close, so to say, in the year 200. It was formulated, yeah, this is good. The Midrash didn't. So although the Midrash starts exactly when the Torah Shebaal Peh starts, and that is when the Torah is given to the Am Yisrael, the Midrash is also there. It's the collection of not the halachas, of not the legal side, but it's a collection of everything else that is outside the legal. You follow?
Well,
the poetry, the philosophy, the theology, the geography, the history, all that. The Kabbalah, all that is, yes.
What I'm saying is, a lot of times Midrashic material will come to explain something within the Torah-shebik Tav.
That's right. Case,
if there's a conflict, a seeming conflict between
yes.
that and a Mishnah, or between
yes.
that and a Braita, how do we resolve that?
If there is a conflict, should there be a conflict? And there can't really be a conflict. What can happen is it's not mentioned in the Halacha and it's mentioned in the Midrash.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not mentioned in the Halacha and it's mentioned in the Midrash, we go according to the Halacha, not the Midrash. Is that clear?
For Halacha.
Yes, yes. I'll just give you an example, you see. I'll just give you an example of that. I'll give you an example of where there are what you call halachic midrashim. Give you an example of it. There is an halachic midrash in Brochus that when a child is 13 years of age, the father goes up and he makes a bracha, Boruch Shepotrani Me'on Shel Shel Zeh. Blessed be Hashem, who has now freed me from a punishment, the prayer books translated from responsibility. The Siddurim translated punishment, and the Siddurim are right, they always right. Blessed be Hashem, who has relieved me from a punishment for this child. That's what the Midrash says. The Midrash doesn't make the Brocha Baruch Ato Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam. It says Baruch Shepotrani Me'on Shel Shel Zeh. That the Midrash doesn't say Baruch Ato Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam is neither here nor there, because it's could very easily be that the Midrash just doesn't find it necessary to say Baruch Ato Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam. When I come to a shir, I don't have to tell you open your Gemaras. It's the one thing I don't have to tell you. Everything else I do have to tell you. But that's the one thing I don't have to tell you. So the Midrash is quite possible that it says Baruch Shepotrani Me'on Shel Shel Zeh. What do you think of that kind of a bracha? A father goes up, a tzalel goes up when he's 13 years of age, boy is 13 years of age, and says, blessed is Hashem, who has now relieved me from the punishment of this child. What do you feel about a bracha like that? Do you take kindly to it or not so kindly to it?
You don't understand.
Very good answer. I also don't understand. Now, you will find in the prayer books they have put in that bracha, you will find that in some synagogues fathers say that bracha. In a real place, maybe your father won't say that bracha. I never said it for any of my children, Boruchim or Tanim, or children. Do you know what it means? And what I'm telling you now is my uncle's. And my uncle would never have thought of saying it and never allowed anybody to say it. It came under his jurisdiction or influence. What does it mean? It means that if I've got a son and now he's 13 years of age, I say, blessed Hashem, who has relieved me from any punishment for this child. Responsibility, certainly. I can only say that if in the first 13 years of his life I have brought him up so well that anything he does afterwards that isn't right can't be blamed, can't be brought back to the first 13 years of his life. You understand what I'm saying? I can't say that. That anything that wrong that my son would do, I can't say. I've got no responsibility for that at all. I can't say. Impossible. So how can someone go and say a bracha like that? But why is it in the Midrash? The Midrash is there for the person who can do it. Once upon a time there were such people. And the person knew if he was that person or not. For him it's meant. But in Halacha we don't use it. We don't use it in Halacha. But you can't say there's a conflict between that and Halacha. It doesn't come into the Gemara, so we don't use it. But you can't say it's a conflict. You understand what it is? Are both the questions answered? Mark, you wanted to ask me a question?
I wanted to ask you a question on that particular bracha, and that was, I think I just learned today in the Sarasati Gurus, I'm not exactly sure, although it says that the children are held accountable for the actions of their fathers, the reciprocal relationship is also true to some extent.
Just say that again.
In other words, it says in the Sarasati Brot that the children will pay for the Averot of their fathers to the fourth generation.
Yes.
I forget the source, but if I remember correctly, the opposite relationship, in other words, the father
yes.
is partially responsible for the Averot of his children also holds.
That's right.
And
says
if that statement is true,
yes.
Then I don't understand. Then I wouldn't understand this bracha at all. It wouldn't make any sense.
It would make sense exactly how you said it.
In other words, if we learn that the father is partially responsible for the averot of his children,
the father says, to the third and to the fourth generation, the father is responsible for the children.
Mm-hmm.
You follow?
Yes.
That is, if the father has done wrong, he's responsible for the third and the fourth generation.
Right.
Right. So what is it that you can't understand?
Well, I'm saying if that is true, then how can a father say when his son becomes 13 that
he's not.
I'm relieved from the punishment of my children?
Yes.
When the Torah is telling us that may not be the case.
Yes, but I've told you that the only person who can do this is a person who is absolutely certain that he has brought up his son in such a way, and he himself has acted in such a way with regards to his son, that nothing that his son does after 13 years of age is directly or indirectly the result of anything that has happened in the first 13 years of his life for which the father might have been responsible. And that's the one way it goes. You follow?
Yes.
Another thing is, if the father does something wrong, children do suffer. Children do suffer, you see. If a man goes to prison for, do they call it a felony here?
Yes.
He goes to prison for a, but he goes properly to prison, not the sort of prison that he goes for a week and then he's out every day and not that, but he goes to prison. He spends 10 years in a real prison, and he deserves every day of those 10 years and every hour of those 10 years. And then he comes in, then he comes out, and his granddaughter wants to marry my son. You think I've got a right to object to it? Scandal's not her fault. Have I got the right to object to it? It's not her fault. Her father was a very nice person, his son. He suffered because of his father. Tried to bring up his daughter very nicely. Yet I've got the right not to want. If I've got to sit down on Friday night, he's my machutin now, he's part of the family. I've got to sit down and have a discussion with him at the table and it'll just break me. It'll break me. That's not my life. Is that the person I've got to associate with on an intimate level? I can be very courteous to him. But that he's got to come into my dalit amas, to that which means everything to me, that I'm not. Of course he's not. Of course he's not the children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a person must know what his actions bring about, how far it goes. And the more, the greater the sense of responsibility a man has, the more he realizes that whatever he does affects a whatever wider circle of people. According to the Torah, not only does it affect the people, it affects the environment. But that I can't get into now. It's already Kabbalah, like Kabbalah, but it's already Kabbalah. Yes.
I have another question before Charles.
Yes.
The four learnings that we did, those refer to Pshat, Remez, Drash, and so on.
Yes.
Those are the four.
This is before you begin Pshat four times. Before Pshat. After four times you begin Pshat. I'm very glad you asked that question. I didn't make that clear, did I? After four times, after you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
Because this is most important. After four times, then you begin Pshat. I would hate to tell you how many times you get over for Pshat.
I
think they started too late.
Yeah. Never too late. What's enough now? What? Never too late. Should I kill you?
You
heard about it. I write it down on a piece of paper for you. You can read it either way. You can read it either way. Study for you. That. So that is for pshat alone. And after you finish pshat, then you can start the next level. So does it give you some idea of what Torah is now?
Yes.
Fine. All right. Now, let's continue. Moshe kibbeh Torah mi Sinai. Now we've got another Mishnah. Moshe received the Torah from Sinai. Now, that is another metaphor, synonym for Hashem. We had there it was Mipi HaGvuro, here it says from Sinai. I could speak a long time to you why when it says there it says Gvuro and here it says Sinai. We just can't go into all this now.
Would you speak on it for a little bit of time?
No, not today. Moshe kibo Torah mi Sinai. Moshe received the Torah from Sinai. Umesoroli Yoshua, and he handed it over to Yoshua. The Yoshua is a Kadim, and Yoshua handed it over to the Zakenim. Here does not mean the Sanhedrin. The Zakenim here means the Shoftim that succeeded the first one was Moshe Rabbeinu, then was Yoshua, then was Osnei ben Knaz, and then it went on all the Shoftim right until Eli HaKohen was already the last of the Shoftim, and then began the period of the Nevi'im of the prophets. And the first prophet was Shmuel. He was the first prophet. And then you had Achiyo HaShileli, and then you had Eliyahu, and then you had Elisha, then you had the lines of the prophets. Alright? So Yeshua handed it over to the judges, to the Zakenim, Uzakenim the Nevi'im, and the Zakenim handed it over to the Nevi'im, Unevi'im the Torula, Anshe Knesset Agadolo. And the Nevi'im handed it over to the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. The Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the English translations have got to the men of the great synagogue, I think. Great Assembly is better. To the men of the great assembly. And these were the 120, just one moment, Sir Charles, if you don't mind. These were 120 who, after the ceasing of Nebuah, after Nebuah ceased, round about the year 444 BCE, it could have been 443 or 445. It's easy for me to remember, so I take 444 BCE. But I can't be wrong more than a couple of years either way, you see. So when that ceased, then the authority went over to the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And after the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, Mordechai, who appears in the, what's the trouble?
I'm sorry.
Mordechai, who belonged to the period of Esther, was a member of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Ezra was Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Nehemiah was Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Daniel was Anshei Knesset HaGedolah.
Isn't Ezra the work of
him? No.
And the four?
Malachi was the last of it. Malachi is the last of it. He wasn't. So then it goes on. Shimon was of the last of the Knesset HaGedolah. Now they are back again in Eretz Yisrael. And then you've got Antigonus, and then you've got Yosef ben Yoezer, and then you've got Yosef ben Yochanan, and it goes right through, and then you've got it going on. But that we will do with the Rambam. Now, so we see there are two things that are dealt with by Chazal. The one thing that is dealt with is how the Torah Shebal Peh was given over to Am Yisrael. That is in the Braisa. The next thing that we deal with is how the guardianship of the Torah Shebal Peh continues. that the Torah of Baal Peh should remain intact, that it shouldn't, nothing should go wrong with it, that it shouldn't be what do you call it when it's changed, falsified. That it shouldn't be falsified, whether in the actual wording of it or in its interpretation. It shouldn't be falsified. For that there was a guardian of the law. For that there was an authority in every generation. One person or one group of people were responsible for that. So there are two separate things. The Rambam, in his introduction to his Yad HaZokor, deals with the second of the two matters. He is interested in showing how this work that he did goes right back to Moshe Rabbeinu. That is what he's interested in showing. It's an easy thing, as far as we are concerned, it's a very easy thing to trace back to the Rambam. And once we trace back to the Rambam, we've traced it right from Moshe Rabbeinu to his own day. So for us it's an easy thing to trace back to the Rambam. To the Vilna Gaon, we're dealing with it every day. It's the easiest thing. Once you go as far as the Vilna Gaon, you've got it. You go to the Rishonim. You see, so it's very, very easy to trace back right to its origin. Now, if you will just allow me to go very quickly over that which we did last week. Kol ha-mitzvot shenitnu lo l'Moshe b'Sinai b'tei Rishon nitnu. The Rambam says that all the commandments which were given to Moshe Rabbeinu, they were given together with an explanation. She'ne'emar ve'etno l'cho es luchos o'evan, and I have given you the tablets of stone, they are Torah v'ha-mitzvah, and the Torah and the mitzvah. Torah zu Torah shibiksat. When it says the Torah, that is the written law, v'ha-mitzvah zu peirusho, that is the explanation, and that is the Torah shebal peh. The Tivonu Lathos of Torah Arti HaMitzvah, and we are commanded to do, I'm sorry, why is that? And we are commanded to do the Torah Shebiksav according to the Torah Shebal Peh. For example, it says in the Torah, you shall bind them for as a sign upon your hand, and they shall be for frontlets between your eyes. There's between your eyes. Yeah. No, we know it's here. Where is on your hand? Yeah. No, we know it's here. Right hand? No, we know it's the left hand. What must be put there? Tefillin. What's the tefillin made out of? Leather. What must it be? There must be a box here that is called a bind. It must be absolutely square, an absolute cube. As near as possible to a perfect cube. Is that all it consists of? No. Inside you put four passages. Which four passages? We'll give you the four passages. In what order that must be, that will be given to you. That is all the Torah Shebal Peh. Have you got it? You must make a sukkah. Where do you make a sukkah? In your house? Can you make it in the house? No, you can't make it in the house. It can't be under. It's got to be outside. If it's got to be outside, what must it be made of? It must be made of vegetation. Can the vegetation be attached to the ground? In other words, can you train a creeper over it? No, it mustn't be mechubel karka. Can you have it there and then just slip off? No, it must be tarsi velomine osui. All these things, where do we know it from? That we know from the Torah Shebal Peh. So whatever is written in the Torah, we do it according to the Torah Shebal Peh. And the mitzvah is called the Torah Shebal Peh. Kol haTorah kesova Moshe Rabbeinu kodem sheyomu biksav yodeh. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah in his own handwriting before he died. The Noson Sefer Ochol Shevet v'Shevet v'Sefer Echad Nosnei v'Orim Ro'ad. And Moshe gave one Sefer Torah to each stem. And one was put into the orange. Shenema, lo koach sefer haTorah azeva samtem oso. You shall take the sefer Torah and put it into the ark. Va'mitzvo shehi peirush haTorah lo kesovo. And the Torah shebal peh, he did not write it. Elo tzivo bo lizekeinim, that he commanded it to the zekeinim.
Here the Zakeni means the Sanhedrin. And to Yeshua, Ulesheol Kol Yisroel. He commanded it to them, Sheneemar Eskola Dovar Asher Onilchi Metzavi Eskem Ozel Tishmeru La'asos. All, everything which I commanded you to do this day, you shall observe to do. And so the Torah Shebarteh was given by Moshe to the Zakenim and to Yeshua and to all Israel. Umipnei ze nikres Torah Shebarteh. And it is on account of this that it's called the oral law, because it was never written down. Although the Torah Shebal Peh was never committed to writing, nevertheless, Lando Moshe Rabbeinu Kulo Bevezdino Leshivim Zakenim. Moshe taught the Torah Shebal Peh to the Shiva Zakenim, to the Sanhedrin, the El Ozor Ufilchos Yeshua. Shloshton Kiblu Mimoshe. And Elozor, who was the grandson of Aaron, and Pinchos, and Yeshua, all three received it from Moshe. You will remember that in the Beraisa which I told you, Kesar Seder Mishnah, it doesn't mention Yeshua, it doesn't mention Elozor, and it doesn't mention Pinchos. Because in the Beraisa it is telling us how the Torah Shebal Peh, which Moshe received from Hashem, was conveyed to the whole people. Now we are interested in the custodianship of the Torah Shebal Peh, in the guardianship of the Torah Shebal Peh, and that is given to Elozor and to Pinchos and to Yeshua. Shloshton Kiblu Moshe. They received it from Moshe. It doesn't mean that they learned it from Moshe. That is something separate that they learned it from Moshe. What it means is that they received it to Moshe as in trusteeship, to hand over as they received it to the next generation, and to see that it was properly received in the name by the next generation. That was the work of Elozor and Pinchos and Yeshua, who belonged to the same generation. Mark, what do you want to ask?
I don't remember. Who were the two sons of Ithamar, and who was the other?
Elozor.
Elozor.
They were the
is
two.
Is that different than Eliezer?
Yeah. No, it's not. Were they Elozor and Pinchos?
Elozor and Ithamar were brothers. Pinchos was the son of Elozor.
Pinchos was the son of Elozor, yes. That's right.
Okay, so this Eliezer but here is the son of Aharon.
It's the son of Aharon, but here he is in the role of a custodian, who is going to give it over to Pinchos, and Pinchos is going to give it over to Yeshua. The Elozor is a custodian, and Pinchos and Yeshua, all these are custodians. And now, this doesn't go according to the Braita, this is the Mishnah of Moshe Kibbe Terem Sinai Mesor of Yeshua, Yeshua is a Kaini. Got it? You wanted to ask something, Charles?
No, I didn't.
All three of them received it from Moshe. Yeah, it received it, not that he taught it to them, but they received it to Moshe in order to hand over. What do you want to say?
It's probably getting off a little bit, but how come Moshe's son did not receive his hand?
Didn't I deal with this last week?
No.
You mean to say I'll just let that pass?
Yeah. I want to ask it.
We had asked the question, I had asked when you said that his son, Aharon's son, or Moshe's son. That's the only thing that was mentioned.
What was mentioned?
Aharon? When we were reading the Braita,
yes.
Moshe's son is to Aharon, and then to his son.
Yes.
I asked, who was his son's mean? Does it mean Aharon's son or Moshe's son?
No, it's Aharon's son.
Yes, that's all.
I've got his face. Get him out. You've all got gardens here in California. Has anybody got a fig tree in his garden?
Next
door. Well, I would strongly advise each one of you who hasn't got a garden to acquire a garden. You can't go wrong in California. You get a garden. Have a piece of grass. You can't go wrong. That's the first thing I advise you to do. Second thing I advise you to do is get a slip. You know what a slip is? A cutting. A botanical cutting from a very good fig tree, and just put it in the ground. And very soon you'll have figs.
you've got to be careful about the first 3 years, but after, it's not the first 3 years of bearing. It's the first 3 years that the tree is in the ground. So know exactly when you put it into the ground, and after it's been in the ground for 3 years, it can work out to quite a good bit less than 3 years, 2.5 it could work out. After that, you can eat the figs. But there's a very interesting thing about figs as compared with all other fruits. What are the other fruits? Pomegranates, there's olives, dates, oranges, apples. No. First of all, there's a very big difference. Can anybody tell me what the difference is? If you've had a fig tree, then you know what the difference is. If you haven't had a fig tree today, you probably won't even know what it is. Mm-hmm. Pardon? No. Something else very interesting. A fig tree, if an apple falls down from the tree, what do? You pick it up and you eat it. If an orange falls down from the tree, you pick it up and you eat it. If an olive falls down, you pick it up. If the dates fall down, you gather the dates from the ground. Not with a fig. If a fig falls down, as soon as it touches the ground, it slips. And all the dust and the worms start immediately. It's very sweet. It attracts all these things. Not only that, even if it doesn't crack, the juice of it, the sweetness of it, oozes out to the outside from the bottom of the fig, not the part that is attached to the tree, but from the bottom of it is a little hole, and it oozes out of it, that gets dust. So Shlomo HaMelech says in Mishlei, says Shlomo HaMelech, Notzer te'eino yochal pirya. He who guards the fig tree will eat its fruit. Or perhaps better, he who guards the fig will eat its fruit. So how do you get your fruit from a fig tree? You watch it every day. Ah, now it's ripe. Then you pick it before it gets a chance to fall. Notzer te'eino. These words, you know, they mean so much to me, those four words. Notzer te'eino yochal pirya. He who guards the fig will eat his fruit. Try and imagine who Shlomo HaMelech was. Try and imagine who he was. I'm just dealing a little bit with him at the Lady's Shield. So, then just first of all, Mishlei, Kehelet, and it's taken into Tanakh, not only one book, Mishlei, Kehelet, and Shir HaShirim, about which Chazal say that the whole of the Torah is Kodesh, is holy, but Shir HaShirim is Kodesh Kodesh, in that Holy of Holies. That's what he wrote. Just one story about Shlomo HaMelech.
This lady who came to see him came from Africa.
Which already gives her great status. In addition to that, she was a queen. And she comes to Yerushalayim, heavily laden, camel bearing all spices, and of course, gold goes without saying. She's from Africa. Diamonds, rubies from Africa. And she came to Solomon, and she spoke what she had in her heart. She had heard a lot about Solomon, and she didn't believe it. Now, she didn't believe it, so she wanted to find out for herself.
How did she find out? I'm going to see it. I want to see it. She goes there, and it says, Vatere Malkus Shvo Eis Kol Chochmas Shlomo Vabayis Ashevon. And the Queen of Sheba saw all the wisdom of Shlomo. Now, this is Yirmiyo who's writing it. So Yirmiyo Anovi is writing this. That's Jeremiah the prophet. He is writing it. And he's a Novi. So, it's the word of Hashem. So, this is what the Torah says about Malkish, who will please tell this to your wife. This is what the Torah says about the Queen of Sheba. She saw all the wisdom of Shlomo. That means she could absorb it, she could understand it. She could understand. So you can see what kind of a woman she was. And then she says to him, the matter which I heard concerning you in my land is true. Everything I've heard about you, about your and about your wisdom is true.